Hey everyone, it's Michelle.
And Brayden.
And this is Spooky Shit. This week we're going to be sharing some creepypasta with y'all.
Yeah, I will start it off.
And then I'll just be rotating in between his stories.
Warning, this episode may contain graphic details. Listener discretion is advised.
But first things first, not even how are you? Again, we're still struggling with the mic stuff. We don't really know what's wrong. So you'll just be using, if you guys can tell, he's just using his computer mic for now. We're still working on it. Hopefully next week, back to normal. We'll see.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Whoops.
But yeah, hopefully it doesn't sound that bad to where you're like, ew, no, off.
Yeah, just turn off the entire podcast. But anyway, how have you been?
Oh, man. I've had a week.
Really?
Not a bad week. It's just,
okay.
It was a little stressful.
Yeah.
I don't remember how it started, but basically my car, I haven't been able to use it because I need new brakes. Like a long time ago. And
it's minorly important.
Yeah, we're pretty squeaky and it just got really bad. So since last week, I've been trying to get them fixed by my wife's cousin. You know, he works at Jiffy Lube, so
Dope. He
offered to like help out and like do it for me. Just and like not even charge me like his labor. He was like, dude, just pay for the parts and I'll like help you out.
That's nice.
Like, okay, cool. So we did that. He wanted to like leave it to like this weekend. But mm-hmm. I was like, no, like, because we were supposed to do it last weekend. But I was like, no, dude, like, I need my car. Because I've been using my aunt's car because she's in Mexico and she left her van here.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, she comes back this weekend. And I'm like, you know, I need my car.
Yeah. Kind of important.
Yeah. So he ended up coming on Wednesday. And, you know, I bought the brake pads and everything. And we took off the tire. And basically, we were like, so close. We, like, were changing the pads, and then it just kind of went downhill from there. Turns what? Out there was only one brake pad on my car, which is, like, I guess you're supposed to have two on both sides.
Okay.
Like, on the left side and the right side. And I guess on my left side, I only had one brake pad.
So what does that mean? Like, did you only have one?
I don't know.
The fuck?
I don't know. Either someone fucked up or, like, it, like, could have fallen out. But that's, like, I was, like, talking to my uncle who has, like, some car experience. And he was, like, that's unheard of that it would just, like, come out.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, damn. But that's probably why it's been, like, sounds really bad and, like, screechy and shit like
Big
that.
Big yikes.
So that was, like, a total bust. And we were, like, what the fuck? Because it was missing one, it's also, like, super, it grinded down a lot. So I need to, like, replace something else. They're called rotors.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I kind of figured because I know I did push it. Like, I was like, damn, I do need new brakes. But I, like, pushed it because I was like, didn't have money and don't have a job right now. So, yeah. And then I guess there's this kind of, like, little claw part that are supposed to keep the brake pads in place. And on one, it's almost on one side, it's kind of like a... How would you explain it? Almost like a slinky. It's obviously not slinky material, but like...
It's like it's coiled, kind of?
Kind of. Yeah, it's basically a coil where you can like force it open.
Yeah.
So it like fits back on.
Oh, okay.
I think it's called a caliper. But this piece is basically stuck. So we couldn't get it open to where it would fit with the new brake pads.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And so they just, we were like FaceTiming my uncle and then him and my cousin-in-law were just like talking and they were like, basically came to the conclusion that it must have gotten stuck because of the other brake pad that was missing. It just kind of like stayed open and just got stuck. So I'm probably going to need to replace that as well.
Jesus.
I should know tomorrow because my uncle's coming down from LA where he lives
specifically for that.
Yeah, so specifically to help me.
Damn, dude.
But I'm like, fuck, dude, because I'm like, this, I can, more money.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That sucks.
But yeah, I was just stressful because of that, and I was just, like, emotional already, and I, like, literally wanted to cry because I was just stressed. And
why emotional? Because of the car?
Yeah, because it's just, like, you know, like, when you
get hit. That's just frustrating.
With, yeah, you get hit with financial, like, stuff, like, bombshells.
Yeah, especially back-to-back like that.
Yeah.
Already have to do your brake pads, and now more.
Yeah, now it's, like, I mean, I know it's mostly my fault for not doing it sooner, you know?
Yeah, but you couldn't have known it was going to be like this.
For sure, but, like, I know it's partly my fault for letting it go so long, because literally, mm-hmm. like, my usual mechanic had told me to change it, like, 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
I know it's mostly my fault. I just, you know, COVID, and then I got laid off, and then, you know what I mean? I put it on the back burner, and I was like, nah, it's still running. It's fine. It's
been a crazy couple years.
Yeah, it has. But yeah, I should know. Hopefully it gets all fixed tomorrow, because, like, everything else is fine. It's just the brakes.
It's arguably the most important part of a car. Yeah,
literally. Super important. And then, yesterday we had a little fundraiser thing for my classmate that passed away.
Oh, yeah? How'd that go?
It went really well. A lot of, like, people came through, and we raised, like, over $1,000.
Is it for a funeral cost?
Yeah, to help his family.
Oh, that's nice.
But yeah, it's super cool. And then, on the bright side, though, not that that wasn't bright, I got hired at a warehouse.
The one you were talking about last week?
Yes.
The one that they were already showing you and telling you what your job was before they hired you?
Yes, that one.
Yeah. I fucking knew it. Congrats. That's exciting.
Thank you.
When do you start?
On Monday.
Ooh. Okay, so next week we'll have a full week of you working to hear about.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully it goes well.
I hope so. Yeah, I was, like, just stressing because then at school, I tried to change my schedule so I can go back to PM.
Yeah.
And student services hasn't been there because they've been sick. So I'm like, shit. And so I talked to, like, she's basically, like, the campus, like, she's called the campus supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
So she's just, like, in charge of the whole school, basically.
Jesus.
And so I went to go talk to her. And then she was like, well, she's like, I don't know how to do it. But I'll email her and, like, it shouldn't be a problem. And I'm like. But I was still stressed because I was like, she told me that she was going to send a message to financial aid. And I was like, fuck, because, like, financial aid can delay it.
Oh, okay.
And I was scared because I owe financial aid money. So I'm like, oh, what if they decline me? Then I'm like kind of screwed, you know?
Then you're just fucked.
Yeah, I was like, then I'm fucked. Then I'll probably have to take something called an LOA, leave of absence. And it like pauses your program. But I'm like, I don't want to do that.
Or just decline the job and go look for another, both of which would suck.
No, I wouldn't. I would just.
You just put the school on pause?
No, yeah, I'd put the school on pause because I need money.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got hired. I'm going to start Monday.
Nice. Congrats. Yeah,
I'm happy. I mean, there's just a lot of stuff I have to pay too. Besides my car, I also owe my license plate, like, sticker
renewal. Oh, your registration?
Yeah, that. Yikes. Registration, but not just for mine. It's also my wife's too. Hers is due this month.
Jesus Christ, that sucks that you guys have it due at the same time.
I know, but you know, hopefully with this job, we'll have that little bit of weight taken off.
You definitely will. I'm excited for you.
Well, yeah, I think that's it's just been my weeks has been all over the place.
It sounds like it's been like kind of a rough week.
Yeah, it kind of was.
But hopefully, you know, it's all getting figured out. Next week shall be better.
I hope so.
It will. I'm putting it into the universe.
How are you?
I'm good. I think, did I mention last week that I'm going to get a tattoo?
I think you did mention that you texted him.
Yeah, he messaged me back and I might go this weekend tentatively, so we'll see. But I'm excited. I'm going to get it, like, above my ankle, though, so shit's going to hurt because there's, like, a bone right there.
Oof.
Yeah, not getting a tattoo in a year. And I'm like, let's get it right next to the ankle. That seems like a super good idea.
Oh, yeah.
So expect me complaining about that afterwards. And also, my nieces are going to be in town this weekend because they moved to another state. She's actually, one of them is going to spend the night tomorrow and the other one later this week. So I'm excited. They don't spend the night together because they are bitchy and don't get along. And the youngest one's not even coming. I don't really know why, but it's fine. She's like, she's only five, so I'm not as close to her because she can't really talk as much, you know?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then a couple other big things. We have another sponsorship going. Again, I'm just doing all the sponsorships that I can, honestly. It's nice.
Hey, it's money.
Yeah. I texted you, and I'm going to bother you about it again. Because this one, I'm the only one who's done it so far. We have 50 people, and it's only been me. I haven't even gotten Robert to do it yet. But it's like a food delivery thing, like Instacart-esque. But it's like, I don't know where it comes from. If it's like a warehouse, like a ghost kitchen type vibe. But you just like order like snacks or like, I don't know if you could like full-on grocery shop. But like they have like home essentials and like medicine and stuff. And you can get delivered. And there's like a flat rate delivery instead of like some places, you know, they charge more. But if you use my link and use my code, you get $10 off and I get $100.
What's that?
Yeah, so we could get up to $5,000 if I could suddenly find 50 people to order. But that'd be fucking insane, you know, you never know.
True. Just that'd advertise be... it on Spooky Pod. I have a spooky podcast. Wow.
On here?
Wow, yes.
On Spooky Shit, whatever this podcast is called. Yeah,
I'm sorry. I'm tired. Like, okay.
I don't even know what the name of this podcast is.
Who am I? No.
What is this? Yeah, maybe I'll advertise on here. It's called GoPuff. Maybe I'll include the link. We'll see if I'm feeling crazy. I don't know if I should cross link it or not. But yeah, I will be harassing you, Brayden. Worst case scenario, I will offer to give you $20 if you order, so you can order, and then I'll get the $100. I mean, I'd obviously prefer not to do that because I'd only get $80, but still, I'll do it.
True.
I'm giving everyone a week, and then I'm going to start making that offer to people in my family and be like, listen.
Listen. Do it.
If I spend 20, I'll get 80 back, so it's definitely worthwhile. Yeah. It's just like per phone, so... maybe, yeah, I'll just give everyone in your family $20 and be like, can you just go order off all their phones? Okay. So, yeah, that's cool. And biggest news of all, we booked our flights to Amsterdam.
Oh, shit.
We're going in November.
Oh, my birthday month.
We're going to be there on your birthday.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah, holy shit, we totally are. Your birthday is the 24th?
Yes.
Yeah, we are arriving in Amsterdam on your birthday. It was actually a birthday celebration for you. You didn't hear?
No, you didn't invite me.
No, I'm inviting you now, live. Do you want to go?
I can't afford it right now.
Motherfucker, you're like, you're not even going to invite me. I invite you. Well.
Well, you see, I just got hired.
Yeah, it is expensive. The only reason we could afford it, because I know I'm always saying I'm broke. I'm still broke, guys. Don't get twisted. But we bought like specifically credit cards that are give you a lot of like travel rewards. So for our tickets, I only had to pay $300 total, and it was $1,000 each ticket. And for our hotels, which Robert used his rewards, we only had to pay $100 for 9 nights at a hotel. What? So also shout out Chase Preferred Travel Card or whatever the fuck it's called. Honestly, dope rewards. We've had it for like 2 years and I had $1,500 in rewards.
Sheesh.
Shit is nutty. But I'm so excited. And it's so fun because people are like asking what we're going to do there. And low-key, we don't even really have plans other than like go around museums and wander around because we're like, this isn't even just a vacation. This is like a scouting trip to see if we want to move here. Like, this isn't supposed to be fun. We're just trying to read the environment, see how we like it. But I'm excited. I'm scared because I've never flown that long before. I think it's like something like a 4-hour flight. And then we have a connecting flight somewhere like near the East Coast, and then it's like an 8-hour flight to get there. The longest flight I've been on is like 5.5 hours to Hawaii, so I'm a little nervous, but I literally might like try to get prescribed a Xanax. I got prescribed a Xanax whenever we went to Hawaii, but I was too scared to take it. But I need to stop being a little bitch. It's literally made to help your anxiety, and I'm scared of the anxiety. It was the only time I've ever taken it is whenever I got LASIK, and they had to convince me to take it because I was scared it would like make me feel weird and make me feel more anxious. And they're like, bro, it's for anxiety. What are you talking about? I don't know. I'm acting like it was like Molly or something. Like, I'm just going to be so high on this plane.
You're done.
But yeah, I think I'm going to do that, and then hopefully I don't crash. Hopefully I don't fucking crash. Yeah. Now that, like, anxiety aside, regular anxiety aside, my fear of shitting myself on this plane, I'm also just kind of afraid of crashing. I think it's funny because everyone's like, oh my gosh, driving's so much more unsafe. And I'm like, I know I'm afraid of driving too. Why would you tell me this? I don't want to drive anywhere either. I just want to, like, I want to take trains or something. Feels the safest. I know flying's the most safe, right?
I believe so. I don't know the whole...
Compared to trains and shit?
Yeah, I don't know.
Cars are definitely just, like, big metal death machines. Ugh, okay. Whatever. But, yeah, hopefully we like it. Hopefully, this sponsorship, like, pops off. Because then I'll have money saved, so it'll make it easier if we do like it to move. Because I literally would move right now. I'm sweating up a storm. You don't even know. I have a paper towel on my back because I'm so sweaty. I would like to live somewhere cold. Yeah. Our apartment's also always hotter than outside, but yeah, that is my main thing. Those are my two big things, tattoo and a trip. My first time in Europe.
That's cool. That should be really fun.
Yeah, I'm super excited. Hopefully it goes well. I know. I wish you could come. Yeah, if we move there, you'll have to come visit. That'd be dope.
Dang, how would we record, though?
If I moved?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to wake up at a weird-ass time because there's like an 8-hour time difference. But I won't be sweaty, at least. I'll work around you because ideally, I mean, the plan is like I'd be hopefully streaming mostly still. So I would just work around whenever you could record and like maybe once a week have a weird ass schedule. Like right now in Amsterdam, it's 4 a.m. because it's like 7 p.m. here.
Ew.
But yeah, that's all for me. I'm super hyped. And if you happen to know any jobs and happen to be renting a nice deal on a nice apartment, fucking email me. That'd be weird. I don't know if I'd actually trust anyone who did that, but I'll put it out there. Anyway, I'm ready for some creepypasta.
All right, I guess I'll get it started.
Some spooky noodles.
Horror noodles.
Horror noodles, that's it.
All right, I'll get started with this one. It is titled Mrs. Edith.
All right.
It is by DeadTired03 on Tumblr. I live in a small neighborhood known as Spring Creeks. I know most of my neighbors, but I'm not very close to them, and we barely talk. There is, however, one neighbor I'm very fond of. The house to the right of mine houses a sweet old lady by the name of Mrs. Edith. Mrs. Edith is 73 years old and lives on her own after her husband, Mr. Richard, passed away 5 years ago. She's a very kind woman that everyone in the neighborhood is friends with. She is often called on to babysit when neighborhood parents leave their children. She's known to be very gentle and soft-spoken, able to calm down the angriest person. Though she barely leaves her house, she's made quite the reputation in our little neighborhood. I don't think I've heard a single person express any dislike toward her. How could anyone possibly dislike her anyway? There's not a single thing about the sweet old woman to hate. I, for one, see her as my grandmother. Every day as I leave early to walk to school, I pass her house and talk to her. She's always on the front porch, sitting in her little rocking chair, as if waiting for me. We'll talk for about 5 minutes before she pulls out a plate of chocolate chip cookies, seemingly from nowhere, and offers me one. Of course, I can never decline her offer. Her cookies are amazing. I've often thought about asking for the recipe, but I can never seem to remember. Today is no different, and it goes just as the previous days have. I always make sure to wake up early so that I have time to talk to Mrs. Edith before school. Talking to her before having to endure rude teachers and bullies always helps me get through the day. I practically rush to get ready, barely pulling my shirt all the way over my head before I'm downstairs and scarfing down my breakfast. When I'm done and throw on my shoes, I sling my backpack over my shoulder and run out towards the house next to me. She's already sitting on her porch, as always, and turns to me with a gentle smile as I rush up to give her a hug. She really is like a grandmother to me, especially since my actual grandmother passed away a few years ago. "Ah, Kit, how are you, sweetheart?" Mrs. Edith asks warmly, tugging gently on my bright red hair. I giggle, already feeling ready to take on school. "I'm as fine as always, Mrs. Edith. How are you doing?" I ask in return, smiling shyly at the kind old woman before me. I don't mean to brag, but I really do think I'm her favorite neighbor. No one interacts with or talks to Mrs. Edith as much as I do, after all. "Oh, fine, fine. I'm even better now that you're here," Mrs. Edith replies, relaxing back into her rocking chair. She looks so frail with her skinny arms, short white hair done up in curls, and her little blue dress with white flowers. She also has a bit of makeup on her face, but not too much. Despite sitting down, it was obvious to anyone that she was very small in height. I often get nervous at the thought of her living on her own. If someone were to break into her house, she wouldn't stand a chance. However, I've never been able to bring up the subject to her.
How do you even bring that up?
For real? I mean,
I think you're going to get your ass beat if anyone breaks in. Just letting you know. I'd be like, okay.
From what I remember, I was like, I read the story a long time ago, but I don't think I ever actually read it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're going to be shook.
Okay.
Okay, the way you say that. You're like, Mrs. Edith, is that a new dress? I asked, sparking our usual 5-minute discussion. Before long, Miss Edith quickly pulls out another plate of her famous chocolate chip cookies. I brighten up immediately, excited to start the day with a cookie. Politely taking one from the plate, I slowly bite into the cookie, hoping to savor it. My taste buds are met with a nice balance of sweetness and chocolate chips. The thing I really enjoy about Mrs. Edith's cookies is how moist they are. She knows how I hate dry cookies. However, what's so special about her cookies is a taste I've never experienced in any other cookie. I can't describe it, which is quite frustrating, but I'll say is that it tastes amazing and makes a cookie even better. They're always so good, Mrs. Edith. I wish I could bake like you, I say. a rush of happiness taking over. Her cookies never fail to put me in a good mood. Oh, you're such a sweet boy, Kit. You're like the grandson I never had, she replied, making me confused. I could have sworn she mentioned having a grandson, but maybe I'm thinking of something someone else said. Despite my momentary confusion, I ignore the sudden feeling of doubt and focus on finishing my cookie. After giving me one more cookie, I reluctantly say goodbye before finally walking off to school. I can't help but feel like I should do something for Mrs. Edith in return, since she's really nice. Maybe I can bake her something in my home ec class. Then I could bring it to her on my way home. I do it with Mom, but she's always so busy. Besides, I want to make Miss Edith something as soon as possible. Now I'm even more excited to get to school. I don't think anything could possibly ruin this day. Several hours later, since home ec is the last class of the day, I had to wait 6 hours before I could bake anything. I decided, after 20 minutes of struggling, to make a decision that I would bake Miss Edith some brownies. Since she's always making cookies, I thought I could make something different. Luckily, I remembered her telling me that brownies are her second favorite dessert. Even if my brownies aren't nearly as good as she'd make them, I still feel that they'll turn out good. I even had the teacher guide me more than she usually would so I wouldn't mess up. I really hope Mrs. Edith would like my dessert, since I always love her cookies. Leaving school, I begin to feel anxious. I can't quite imagine why I'm suddenly so nervous, since it's just Mrs. Edith. She's the sweetest person I've ever met, and I don't doubt there's anything to worry about. Still, I can feel myself growing more and more excited as I make my way to Spring Creeks. Mrs. Edith lives in the fifth house on the left, and it's painted a bright pink color. It's very difficult to miss, and I spot it as soon as I enter our little neighborhood. However, the bright pink color isn't what immediately catches my eye. Bright red and blue flashing light assaults my eyes as I walk up to Mrs. Edith's house. There are 5 police cars surrounding her property, with yellow caution tape spread in her front yard. A crowd of people, whom I recognize to be the rest of my neighbors, are scattered around the shocking scene. With a jolt, I realize I've stopped walking. I hastily begin running forward, panicked and worried, worried thoughts filling my head. What's going on? Is Mrs. Edith okay? Please tell me she didn't get hurt. As I think that, I notice there are no ambulances. Then what could possibly be wrong? As I skid to a stop beside a man, I look just in time to see the police escort Mrs. Edith out of her house in handcuffs.
Oh.
About 4 policemen walk out of her house, most of them pale and clearly disturbed. What's going on? I can't believe she'd do something like this, said the man I stood beside. Do what? What did she do? I'm so scared. Excuse me? What's going on? Why are they arresting Mrs. Edith? I ask, feeling a twist of dread in my stomach. The man looked down at me in surprise, clearly having not noticed I was beside him. He looked back at Mrs. Edith being pushed into the police car, chewing on his nails. I waited patiently, understanding that he needed to get his thoughts together. Listen, kid, I don't think I should be telling you this, but I really don't care either. Apparently, some guy ran out of Edith's house claiming that she had been killing people and baking them into cookies.
What?
He said she was going to kill him too until he escaped. The man finally said, his face turning pale. With that, I turned around and threw up.
Dude, whenever you're talking about cookies having unique tastes, I was like, it's gonna be kids. But I was kind of thinking as a joke. Gnarly.
It was not a joke.
It was not a prank.
It's not a drill.
And then when we set the lights too, I thought she like died and someone had broken it.
Right?
Like, no Me ambulance. Too. I was like, wait.
It's like, it's shooken. Shook
I
it.
Like that one. Damn, how do you have whole ass human meat in your cookie and you can't tell? Like, hey, this cookie's right. A little meaty.
She knew how to cook it right. I don't know.
She was a good baker.
She was.
All right, so my story is called The Backroads, and this was written by Paige Turner. Get it? Paige Turner. I didn't get to say that loud. Anyway. Thursday. Today is Thursday, June 16th, 2022, and I don't know where I am. I parked on the side of the road in the middle of nowhere. I'm not even sure this is still Louisiana. I haven't had a bar of service all day. I've been driving for 9 hours, and the only thing I want to do is sleep, but I'm afraid to close my eyes. Staring at this screen is only making it worse, but I need the distraction. None of this makes sense. My house is a 30-minute drive to town if you take the highway, but in any other direction, you can ride the back roads for hours. Most aren't even on the map. When I was younger, Mom would take me riding on summer evenings, and we always found new routes to explore. That's how I learned how to drive, and after getting my license, I started going more often. Sometimes I would bring friends, but for the most part, it's something I enjoy doing alone, especially after Mom died. She was killed by a drunk driver 6 years ago. I've never seen a house or more than a handful of other vehicles out here. It's perfect for camping. I've stayed overnight more times than I can count and always felt perfectly safe. It's almost like being the only person in the world. The only difference with this trip was that damn tunnel. Life has been hard lately, and only having one job in the books doesn't help. There's nothing on this wedding's menu that could be cooked the day before, so instead of doing anything productive, I convinced myself to go for a drive, which was clearly a mistake. There's a beautiful, crystal-clear pond that became my go-to place for quick trips or days I brought someone along. It's not very far, and I know every road in between. Or I thought I did. Leaving the pond, there should only be two ways to go, back home or further into nowhere, but then I saw a third option. While turning the truck around, I found myself staring at a paved road hidden behind the tree line. While it's understandable to miss when driving past, I've been to that pond 1,000 times and always turn around in the same place. This shouldn't have been my first time seeing it, but I was too excited to think any more of it. A closer look revealed only shrubs and weeds blocking the way, so I decided to drive straight through. A new path so close to home was too big of a deal to pass up. Of course, that feels incredibly ignorant to say now. I got through the brush easily, and after a mile, it cleared up again. But 6 miles after that, I knew it was time to turn back. That's when I finally saw the end of the road. Ahead was an overpass with what looked like old train tracks, and what I thought was a dead end was actually a tunnel running beneath it. At first, it looked too small to drive through. I only wanted to get my headlights close enough to see inside, but then the road did keep going. I could see daylight at the other end. The tunnel itself was damp, and the air smelled musty, but it was completely empty. When it came out of the other side, the road stretched ahead for miles with occasional turnoffs on both sides. It should have been impossible to get lost by going straight. I should have been able to turn around at any point and drive directly back to the pond. I still don't understand why that isn't the case. I'd hoped to find a landmark to use on the next visit, but after an hour of nothing but random cutoffs, I realized how late it was and finally turned back. Everything looked exactly the same as far as I could tell. I have no clue where I went wrong. But an hour and a half later, I was still cruising with no sign of the tunnel. If anything, I was driving even faster than before. It doesn't make any damn sense. I drove for another 30 minutes before stopping completely. I had to pee and needed time to think without wondering if I was headed even further from home. If I had made even a single turn, I could believe being lost, but the idea of turning back after driving in a straight line felt unnatural. It would mean hours of retracing my steps only to turn around again when that didn't work. How many hours would be wasted covering the same ground? But then there's no choice because something is obviously wrong. It's maddening. I'm still stuck in that hellish thought loop, but I just couldn't stay on the side of the road. In the end, I turned around once again, this time going much, much slower. The only way I could imagine getting lost was if the road had split somewhere when I wasn't paying attention. I came to a rolling stop at every turnoff and even got out a few times, but there was absolutely no chance I merged off any of them. By the time I made it back to my original stopping point, the sun was starting to set. My brain fed me whatever I needed to hear to avoid turning back a third time. I figured Mom and I had only been able to spend so much time on the back roads because we took the small, curvy trails that never really led anywhere. Now I was traveling in a straight line. It had to lead somewhere. All I needed to do was make it to the next town, or maybe not even that far if I could find a spot with cell service. But now it's almost midnight, and I stopped because the road suddenly ended, or at least the pavement did. There's nothing but a long, dusty trail left, and there's no chance of finding a signal that way. I need to wait for morning and check out some of the cutoffs. Nothing about this. Friday. I wonder if I've been reported as missing. I'm sure I have. How could I not be? Surely the back roads are the first place to look right. I'm sure it is. Sweetfire shits, I thought I was going to die last night. I was lying across the back seat, riding, when I heard something moving around in the forest. I assumed it was an animal until it broke through the tree line and the unmistakable sound of shoes scraping its concrete made me drop the phone. There was a half second of euphoric relief as I imagined myself being rescued by a kindly old farmer before my body went numb with dread. People volunteering with search parties didn't wander through the woods alone at night, without flashlights. This person hadn't driven either, would have heard an engine. I didn't know what the hell to do. My first instinct was to jump in the driver's seat and run for it, but then I imagined bullets flying through the windows. It seemed reasonable to think a person skulking through a dark forest would be armed. I wanted my pistol for my glove compartment more than anything, but my arms refused to obey. The footsteps were moving slowly like someone was checking out my trunk, and when they turned to walk along the passenger side, my body finally moved. Without the phone's light, it was too dark to see anything, but as I slowly inched forward, the footsteps paused next to the front passenger door. My heart stopped along with them. I hesitated with my hand in the glove compartment's handle, wondering if the light would come on, when I realized something that shot chills down my spine. I hadn't locked the doors after using the bathroom. Instead of fumbling for the controls, I felt for the knob and gently pushed it down. At the same instant, the dull thud of a locked handle being pulled broke the night silence like a gunshot, and there was no further caution in my movements. I ripped open the glove compartment, grabbed my gun, and racked one to the chamber as the sound of several footsteps fled back into the forest. There had been nothing to indicate multiple people were outside, but there was no mistaking it. Feet were skidding across the pavement as others were already tearing through the thick brush, and I threw myself into the driver's seat. The headlights came on just in time to reveal the last two figures vanish into the darkness. I was in tears with relief over the fact I had turned around before parking, and it wasn't because of forethought, but fear. Just looking at that long dirt road made my stomach clench. As for the group of crazies, I don't know, it might be time to entertain the possibility that I'm the one who's crazy. I only caught a quick glimpse as I sped away, but those people resembled terminal cancer patients with animalistic movements. They were sickly thin and hunched over like gorillas, but moved with deceptive speed. Thanks to the adrenaline, I was wide awake and traveling faster than I should have. But I wanted as much distance to myself and those people as possible. After driving a few miles, my brain slowly began formulating coherent thoughts again. I think it's safe to say my new friends don't have motorized transportation, but I drove for almost an hour before stopping. If I didn't close my eyes, I was going to fall asleep at the wheel, and if I wreck, I'm dead. There were 3 hours before dawn, so I set an alarm, passed out, and was somehow still alive when it sounded. I woke to a foggy morning, and the long road ahead served as a bleak reminder of my situation. Mother Nature called, and I was starving, but luckily there were a few basic supplies in the truck. After eating 2 power bars, I somehow managed to stick with water instead of downing the bottle of whiskey, and thank goodness I wouldn't have it now. The shit I've seen today is enough to make that gun look mighty appetizing. All goddamn day I kept on driving straight down that same road, the way I should have been going in the first place. I don't care if it took 12 hours to find the next town. I wasn't going to start turning down a bunch of random roads that could take me in circles. By 9, I'd seen nothing but trees and grassy clearings. My stomach was growling louder than my music, and I was barely containing my anger when a familiar beeping sent me soaring over the edge. When I finally regained a modicum of control, my throat was raw and my face looked as red as it felt. The gaslight was on, and the possibility of dying out here became very real very fast. When I came around the next curb, I thought I was hallucinating. A small gas station suddenly appeared in the distance. But there was no way I'd driven farther than yesterday, and I definitely had to pass it without noticing. As I came closer, my heart sank when I realized it was abandoned. There were no other cars, lights, or signs, just old pumps and a dark store. I parked anyway, just to think for a minute, and continued to be surprised. The building looked like it hadn't been touched in 20 years, yet the pumps looked as if they were installed last week. I got to stretch my legs, and the one next to me turned on, including its TV. It should have been possible, but that hardly matters in this place. Whether I was hallucinating or not, I wasn't going to waste the opportunity. Even more astonishing than the fact that it worked was the woman on TV. She was giving a local news and weather report like you would see at a normal gas station. It's a beautiful, sunny day on the paved back roads. The last of the morning's fog will be clearing up shortly, and we'll have a high of 98 this afternoon. Those transitioning to dirt roads should show due caution as we've had significant rise in stranded sightings. Thank you for choosing Last Stop Station. Until next time, safe travels. I didn't understand half of what she said, and there was plenty more I can't remember. If I find another one, I'm going to have my phone ready to record. Thank goodness I have a car charger. I wouldn't even have that by now. After refueling, I decided to take a look at the store. I was completely out of food and on my last bottle of water. I would have taken anything that wasn't poisonous, but I was shocked to find water, soups, and canned fruits. Simply there for the taking. While those were fully stocked, there was no snack foods, soft drinks, or random accessories. If the canned sell-by dates weren't so recent, I would think that stuff had sat there for years. There was nowhere to cook the soup, no phone, and no cash register either. Everything about that store was just off. But as strange as it was, I didn't want to leave. It was nice to finally stretch my legs and be out of the truck longer than a bathroom break. Unfortunately, I couldn't afford to waste time hanging out in an abandoned gas station. In the end, I compromised by staying long enough to eat. I tried not to pin my hopes on someone else stopping by, but I found myself watching the road more than I care to admit. My original idea was to find a makeshift pot and build a fire, but then I remembered some of my camping gear was still in the truck. With my hot plate, the only hard part was opening the cans with a dull pocket knife. As expected, no one came, but I couldn't waste any more time there. At that point, I expected to spend the rest of the day on the road and convince myself to take some supplies. Before I knew it, I'd robbed the place blind, and I hoped the police come looking. They won't, but I can dream. I feel better with a full meal in my stomach and a truck full of free supplies, but it's hard to keep a cool head when you're coming up on your second night and being lost in the middle of nowhere. I eventually drove straight into the sunset until, once again, being forced into a sudden stop when the pavement ended. The way forward was yet another long, dusty trail, and this one inspired the same cold dread as the last one. Logic told me the weird pale people couldn't be way out there, too, but I wasn't taking any chances. I turned back and drove for another hour before stopping for the night. After eating a can of peaches, I started writing, and now I can't stop thinking about that lady on the little TV. She was talking about these roads like they were their own town or something. I want to hear the part about being stranded again. Maybe I'm not the only one who this has happened to. Either way, I've had enough for one day. I need more than a few hours of sleep. Staying on the road isn't an option anymore. Tomorrow, I'll need to choose one of the cutoffs. Saturday. There's no question I'm not in Louisiana anymore. I'm not even in the real world. I've met someone this afternoon. I don't think he's real. He's either an hallucination or a demon. I'm just not sure which. I'd essentially chosen a cutoff at random when I couldn't find the gas station again, and 20 miles later, there was a man walking along the shoulder. I was almost too afraid to stop, but he got on his knees in the middle of the road, begging. In the end, I needed someone to talk to more than I cared about the possibility of being murdered. He claims to know a little about what's going on here, and though his story is completely unbelievable, I can't come up with an alternative. He doesn't know how or why things are the way they are here, but he got here by driving through a tunnel just like I did, except he was in Pennsylvania. If he hadn't told his story first, I wouldn't have believed him. Sounds too much like my own. The only difference is what happened after he ran out of gas. Since he started to quarter tank, he had no idea anything was wrong yet. The service station appeared around the next curve, exactly as it had for me. And based on his description, it sounded like the same one. The pump's TV came on, and after a brief weather report, there was another confusing public service announcement. And don't forget to stock up for tomorrow. As usual, our stations will be closed for Sunday, no exceptions. Please ensure all persons are cleared from the premises by no later than 11:59 p.m. And thank you for choosing Last Stop Station. Until next time, safe travels. After filling his tank, he went inside to find a nearly empty store and only then realized there were no other cars or people in sight. Since the pump worked, the reason the store must be open and worried something may have happened to the clerk. Rob went outside to search for signal, and when he was unsuccessful, he noticed that the store was at the bottom of his steep rise. There was no trail, but he was able to make it up fairly easily. Unfortunately, he still couldn't get reception. Determined to drive back to town, he made his way down the slope, only to find the store and his car were gone. He swears he walked in a straight line and found the road easily, but it was empty. If it weren't for my own experience these last few days, I wouldn't have actually believed it, but now I definitely do. Assuming Rob is real, of course. He had no choice but to start walking, and he headed in the direction he believed would take him to town. Several hours later, he still hadn't seen another car or store, and the sun was being set. That's when he ran to Bonnie and Clyde. At least, that's what they called themselves. They were stopped at their own gas station, and Rob ran straight inside to tell a story, but the couple didn't want to hear it. Clyde held Rob at gunpoint while Bonnie loaded their van. The couple wouldn't give him a ride, but the man was willing to answer a few questions while he waited. Based on what this guy told Rob, there were three stages to the back roads, each more dangerous than the last. The paved streets are the outskirts that make up stage one. The dirt roads are stage two and lead deeper into the maze, while stage three is tire tracks in the grass in the heart of the maze. The entrance can be found almost anywhere in the world if you venture deep enough into nowhere, but the exit can only be found in stage three. Gas stations only appear when a vehicle is low on fuel, and they disappear the moment you leave. Had Rob climbed the hill before filling his tank, he would still have his car. Thank goodness I have the camping gear, or I would have made the same mistake when trying to heat my suit. The only exception to this rule is Sunday. If you run out of fuel, the store is closed, you'll have to sit there until it reopens. Anything that was inside when it disappeared will still be there except for people. We don't know what happens to them, but Clyde said there used to be 4 people in their group. The other 2 decided to see where the place they went to and disappeared, but when it came back, only their bags and clothes were left behind. The store supposedly have beer and junk food in stage 2, and that alone has me interested. I finished my whiskey last night, and I don't think I could handle this place sober. I would already be on my way now if it wasn't past midnight. Compared to the last 2 stages, the paved streets are fairly safe until the transition to dirt. That's where the stranded like to lurk, and what Rob was on his way to becoming before I found him. The ones who lose their vehicles can't make gas stations appear, and eventually turn to the forest for shelter. They hide deep in the dark woods during the day, and only come out at night. The lucky are able to join an existing group or form their own. They need enough members to ambush travelers, but not too many to feed. Those who are rejected get eaten, and those who try to survive alone starve. Eventually, they begin to look like the ones I saw, and had I been asleep with my doors unlocked, I would have become their dinner. As for stage 2 itself, Rob only knows that something hunts the roads at night. When he asked Clyde about the final stage, the man went wise as sheep and refused to answer any more questions. As the couple got back into their vehicle, they apologized for their drastic behavior, stating they simply couldn't risk taking on a stranger. Rob was bitter about it, but I don't blame them. If I hadn't been alone desperate, I would never have stopped. From what it sounds like, people try to find the exit in stage 3, and the ones who survive the failure resolve to a life on the paved street. I've been thinking about it all evening, and I'd rather die than live the rest of my life out here. The fact I don't want to spend 6 days a week inside a gas station upset Rob pretty bad. We argued for 3 solid hours until I pretended to agree with him. He repeated the same argument with slightly different wording, like I was simply too stupid to understand. I was sick of it, but more importantly, I was starting to suspect Rob would crack me over the head and steal the truck if he didn't get his way. Since the station's going to be closed tomorrow, I made sure to run out of gas this evening. I told Rob 3 times to let me get my phone ready before he got out, but the bastard didn't listen. Before I could put the truck in a park, he jumped out and rushed into the store. I heard the TV start the second his door was open, but he was completely oblivious. I panicked and missed whatever it was saying while fumbling with my phone. The only part I got recorded was the, "Until next time, safe travels" bullshit. I'm grateful for the information Rob has shared, but I've decided to go ahead alone. I wish I could have thought to leave him at the station this evening, but I can't waste another day waiting for him to reopen. I don't feel safe sleeping when he's around. Tomorrow morning, when he uses the restroom, I'll just drive away. I don't know what else to do. For now, he's either asleep in the back seat or really good at fake snoring. My instincts are screaming for me to stay awake, but I feel like someone poured salt into my eyes and staring at the screen is only making them worse. I need to find another way to keep myself up. Sunday. Rob is dead. I was right about that bastard. Have you ever noticed that crazy ideas sound less crazy in the dark? I kept imagining Rob in the back seat, awake and waiting for me to fall asleep. Then he would sit up, put his belt around my neck, and pull. It bothered me so much I decided to retrieve my gun. I kept it beneath my leg until dawn, and tucked into my waistband when it was finally time for breakfast. Rob snored the entire night. As I entered the forest to relieve myself, I was feeling fairly foolish. No shit, the man's afraid of going deeper into the hellhole. If I'm this terrified, how must he feel after what he's gone through? I'm the monster, walking around with a gun and planning to leave a man for dead just because he disagreed with me? I was fully convinced to abandon my cruel plan until I returned to see Rob in the driver's seat. The passenger window was down, so I had a perfect view of him from the tree line. He was frantically searching for the keys, which were tucked securely in my pocket. I don't know what he might do if confronted, so I made plenty of noise coming back through the last brush. When I made it to the truck, he was opening a can of fruit like he hadn't just been trying to leave me behind. I made soup, but avoided taking anything vital out of the truck. I planned to leave him some food and water, but I was ready to take off as soon as he stepped away. Only, he didn't go. We were both waiting for the other to let their guard down, but Rob lost patience. He revealed the crowbar he'd stashed nearby and calmly explained I'd be staying behind since I'm determined to kill myself anyway. My mind went blank. It's one thing to imagine it, but it's nothing like reality. I was calm and steady as I told him to take the truck. I even threw the keys at him. There was no thought behind it, only instinct. When he turned to walk away, I drew my weapon and fired without warning. The first shot went to the center of his back and made a horrible sound as hell. I hurried closer but hesitated before making the final shot. Part of me wanted him to fully understand what happened. When he began coughing up blood, I ended his suffering with one more shot to the head. At least he won't become one of the stranded now. I thought it would feel different, like it would change me, but this place has already done that. I don't care that Rob is dead. I only did what was necessary to survive. The funny thing is, he was right. We should have stayed on the nice paved streets where it was safe. There's much worse things out there than death. After leaving Rob's corpse behind, it took me 5 hours to find the next dirt road. It was a long, miserable day, but just to be safe, I turned back to waste some gas. My heart was set on getting into the station with beer at midnight. I didn't know what kind of trouble I was getting into, and honestly, I didn't care. At 12:03, I drove onto the dirt road, and high beams revealed a horde of stranded behind the tree line. I didn't slow down, and they didn't come out. They only want easy targets. Unfortunately, I miscalculated how quickly the gas light would turn on. Less than 20 minutes later, I was still going when a loud roar rattled my windows, followed by the shrill cry of captured prey. Reality began to set in as I realized how foolish my plan had been. Moments later, a low rumble of thunder sounded, and only when it was joined by the violent cracks of breaking limbs did I understand it wasn't thunder at all. Whatever hunts these roads at night had found me. I heard it break through the tree line, but couldn't force myself to look in the mirror. I knew it'd be game over if I did. The roads are much smaller in Stage 2, meaning I had to drive slower. My full focus was on navigating the curvy roads as quickly as possible without losing control. I didn't even hear the low fuel light. But when that bright, beautiful gas station appeared around the next bend, I almost crashed into the pump. Parking as close to the door as possible, I threw myself in the truck without even turning off the engine. I was inside under the counter for a solid 10 minutes before realizing everything had gone quiet. Very carefully, I crawled to a window and peered outside. It looked like several stranded had been fused together to form this thing. Only his head was visible in the station lights. The rest was thankfully concealed in a sea of darkness. Its shape was far smaller than expected after hearing the sounds it made, but its face was the most grotesque thing I've ever seen. Its mouth was lost beneath masses of pasty, white skin that looked like pure scar tissue, and I couldn't get the look of its single glassy eye out of my mind. There was only a gaping black hole left where the other used to be. Apparently, the stations work as safe zones. I knew it saw me, but it didn't come any closer. After vomiting, I worked up the courage to test my theory and stepped outside to turn off the truck. The figure still didn't move. That made me feel safe enough to finally look around the store. I helped myself to a six-pack of Coors and Cheetos and tore through the junk food like a death row inmate. I'm not ashamed to admit I'm fairly drunk.
Same. No.
I wonder if it's possible to fill up with just enough gas to be on empty before nightfall. Maybe my only chance to make it to Stage 3. There's no way I could have outran that thing all night. Hell, that's a brilliant idea. If it works, I could use that strategy the whole way home. It would give me an entire week to search before the store is closed again. Holy shit, I finally see a light at the end of this miserable tunnel. I'm going to get a very good night's sleep and hit the road at first light. Next Saturday. I guess I dropped the ball in keeping a record of my time in the back roads, but too bad. No one will ever see this anyway. This has been one of the worst weeks of my life. The things I've had to do to survive are unspeakable. I only open this to say I'm quitting. If someone finds this one day, great. If not, I don't really care. My plan to only fill half the tank worked great. But it took 3 days to find a grass trail. Once I did, I never dreamed I would survive long enough to find another. But now that I have, I'm not leaving. The creatures in the stage don't give a damn if it's night or day. They're hungry. I'd rather face the devil himself than walk out that door again. There are things out there that make the wanted monster look like a kitten. I'm done. Today is Saturday, and it's almost midnight. I'm going to hit upload, even though I know it won't work, but just in case, my name was Jesse Palmer. Fuck the back roads.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. So funny, reading that partly made me like, oh, I want to go drive around random streets. And I was like, why? That's like literally the lesson here is don't do that shit.
Yeah, don't. Alright, I have two more little stories. They're pretty short, so I'll just read both of these and then Michelle could say another long one.
Cool. Sounds good.
All right, this one's titled The Man in the Snow. You are home alone, and you hear on the news about a profile of a murderer who's on the loose. You look out the sliding glass doors to your backyard, and you notice a man standing out in the snow. He fits the profile of the murderer exactly, and he is smiling at you. You gulp, picking up the phone to your right and dialing 911. You look back out at the glass, and you press the phone to your ear, and you notice he's much closer to you now. You then drop the phone in shock. There are no footprints in the snow. It's his reflection.
No.
I love your reaction. That was my reaction.
I thought you were going to be like, it's a ghost. I hate that. I hate that so much.
Oh my god, that's so, I would die.
I mean, yeah, you would.
Yeah, you would. But like, you know what I mean? That's fucking scary.
That's awful. I did not understand. I thought you were like, it's a ghost outside. I don't know. No. Doesn't leave footprints because it's a spirit. Did not catch
he's
on.
He's in the house. He's in the house.
Fuck that. Ew.
This other one is titled, I Told You to Smile. It was the 2nd of January, 2:04 a.m. I woke up to knocking on the door. One knock every 3 seconds. I slipped on my slippers and walked down the stairs. As I walked down, the knocking on the door got faster, almost like a heartbeat. When I got to the door, the knocking stopped. I looked outside and nobody was there. I went back up to my room and went back to bed, thinking it was just some kids playing a prank. At 4:21 a.m., I woke up to the front door slamming shut. I jumped, terrified. I looked over at my frosted window to find smile written all over in frost.
Hell no.
I grabbed my phone next to me, ready to call 911. Only to find a message written on it saying, I told you to smile. I cried and ran for my life, running outside. As soon as I got outside, I knocked on my neighbor's house across the road. They answered and held me while I sobbed. They phoned the police. At exactly 5:42, the police came to my neighbor's house after an extensive search of my house. They told me that there had been no evidence at all that anyone in my house other than me. The messages on the window were gone, same with my phone. They told me to just get some sleep and advised me to see a doctor about stress and anxiety problems. Fuck that, I knew what happened to me was real. The following evening, after spending the day at my neighbor's, I went home. I went up to my bedroom and set up a camera. It was aimed at my bedroom door and my bed. I set it to record and went to sleep. Thankfully, I slept through the night. However, as I watched the footage, I couldn't believe what I saw. At 3 in the morning, something crawled out from under my bed. It was a completely naked, anorexic man. He stood up and looked at me on my bed. He did so for another hour, not moving at all. Then he moved. He walked over to the camera until his face took up the whole shot. He was extremely pale and had bulging veins all over his head. His eyes were completely black with a huge smile on his face. He stared at the camera for another 2 hours, not blinking, just slightly twisting his head every now and again. After 2 hours of him staring went past, he walked back over to my bed and crawled back under. I skipped the video forward until it showed me getting up and walking over to the camera. The video finished. I was frozen with fear. The video showed him going back under, but not leaving. Whatever it was still there.
The fuck? Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
So it just ends with, yeah, there's a fucking creep under my bed. Mm-hmm. Ugh. Ew. I don't like that. You know, at first you're talking about like Britain, like the frost and stuff. I was like, why does this sound like the next victim of that first story?
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. And you're like mentioning the phone and I was like, this is familiar. God.
It's similar but different.
I could never film myself at night because I just know I'm gonna see some creepy shit, right?
Right. You're gonna see a shadow and be like, what the exactly. fuck is that? Lit. Did you see that?
Disgusting. No.
But yeah. Those were the two little stories I had.
Those were good ones, actually.
I was like, they're like, I guess, small but effective.
Yeah, they're very impactful for small stories.
I like those, though.
Yeah. All right, so my last story is called The Tale of Sam Fuller. This was written by Sam Gallenberger. Before I get to me, I need to start here. There's a story people began telling in our town of Casper. They call it the Tale of Sam Fuller. A while back, Sam and his little brother Toby were playing by the lake. Sam was using a rock to write things in the sand, and Toby was playing with his new shark toy. It didn't take long before another group of kids came around. They started making fun of Sam. Apparently, he would talk to himself in the mirror at night, and that story got out. The bullying persisted, and the boys demanded that Sam and Toby swim to the middle of the lake. Sam protested, saying Toby was too little and couldn't swim. That didn't stop these boys. One of them threw Toby in while the others held Sam back. The main bully started throwing rocks at Toby to get him to swim deeper. It was obvious he was struggling, but his fear of the rocks instinctively forced him to go deeper into the lake. Sam fought to escape, but it was to no avail. Toby didn't get far before he started going under. The bullies were too busy dealing with Sam to notice. A rush of adrenaline hit Sam. He gouged one bully's eye, grabbed a stick, and pierced another boy's leg with it. Sam dove into the water and swam as fast as he could to rescue his brother. By this time, Toby had gone under. There was no sign of him in the dark, murky water. Sam frantically looked for Toby. He bawled and screamed in between dives. Eventually, he had expended too much energy, and he began to go under himself. Coming to the realization that his brother was dead, Sam stopped attempting to swim. As his body gradually approached the lake's dark floor, he felt nothing but pure hatred. As he descended deeper, water entered his body, and his lungs began to collapse. It's speculated that his last thoughts were that he would give anything to get his revenge. Shortly after is when the disappearances started. The city was already in mourning due to the loss of the two boys' lives. That story had been manipulated by the bullies and was said to have been a terrible accident, no questions asked. Didn't take long before children started saying they saw a creature at night. The creature allegedly had pale and permanently wet skin. Its face was said to lack facial features, except for an abnormally large mouth, one that was constantly muttering. One of the bullies was quickly found dead, impaled by dozens of sticks. Another was found dead in the lake. He'd been tied to a rock and drowned. His eyes had been gouged out. The final bully and his family moved out of Casper shortly after. Those in the know say the creature is Sam Fuller reincarnated, that he'd made some deal with the devil to come back at the cost of his soul. That'd be the price he was willing to pay to get his revenge. Rumors spread that there were three signs he was coming for you. First, you'd be left a toy in a weird place, giving it a deeper meaning. Next, he'd carve you a message with a rock. Finally, he'd give you a glimpse of him in the mirror 24 hours before you die. The mental toll this took on you seemed to be its primary weapon. Those in town didn't seem too bothered by him going after the bullies. They justified it. Except it didn't stop there. Lowlife started to go missing. Rebellious teens were next, and then it was children. Eventually, anyone who did things the creatures didn't like became a target. It became an unwritten rule in Casper that if you wanted to be left alone, there were certain things you needed to avoid. Going to the lake after dark, or ever messing around near it, was strictly prohibited. Throwing rocks was another. Lastly, you couldn't speak ill of Sam or Toby Fuller. Once these ground rules were understood, things started calming down. The last alleged victim of Sam Fuller was a little girl named Verona White. Anyways, I hate to force all that on you, but it's important to understand how and why things work the way they do in this town. I'd been overseas for years and only recently returned, and I missed that entire chapter in the history of Casper. When I returned, I decided to make up for lost time. I unpacked at the old family cabin and did some maintenance in the shed, including a little painting. The shed was not in any condition to be useful at that point, and the work to make the necessary changes was extensive. I noticed a bottle of vodka in the liquor drawer and emptied it out. I decided to fill it up with something more appropriate. All in all, it took about a week. After I fulfilled my obligations, I wanted to reach out to an old friend. It had been forever since Mark and I had gone fishing, and it was about time we changed that. Today, Mark was late. I'd gone to the lake just before dawn, and the weight was beginning to wear on me. We'd always started fishing at the same time, and yet today he was at least 45 minutes late. There wasn't much to do, so I began skipping rocks. The light from the moon was replaced by that of the sun, and after a while, I simply sat down to wait for him. He arrived soon after. "You're late," I said. "Don't want to get here too early these days," he replied. "Why, the kids around here are a problem nowadays?" "Something like that," he said. With that, we pushed his canoe into the water. I was filled with a rush of familiarity. The cool breeze washed across my face, reminding me of my many trips out here. I'd never forget the scent of this lake as long as I lived. "I heard you've gotten yourself a few medals," he said. "I would have preferred if I hadn't," I replied. He chuckled. "Makes sense." The hours flew by. We did some catching up, but mostly just enjoyed nature in its purest form. I don't know exactly how long we were out there. I suggested we head back, and Mark agreed. I tried to adjust my position on the boat, but lost my balance stepping over some rods. I fell into Mark, knocking him into the water. I started laughing, but Mark immediately started to scream. "It was an accident, I swear, it was an accident." It was hard to tell. It looked like flailing from where I was standing, but it appeared Mark was trying to gesture something. His face was pale and his eyes were darting back and forth at his surroundings. "Yeah, I know, Mark, that was my fault," I said, reaching my hand out towards him. "I'm not talking to you," Mark gasped, grabbing my hand and struggling back in the canoe. "Well, then who the hell are you talking to?" I asked. That's when he told me all about Sam Fuller. "Really? It's a pretty unbelievable story, Mark," I said. "I have a family, Grayson. I'm not risking anything," he replied. "Fair enough." We made our way back to land and said our goodbyes. I gazed upon the lake once more to admire its beauty. Then I started to chuckle. Sam Fuller, the lake creature. Yeah, right. I made my way back to my truck. I was going to be hiking later and figured now was as good a time as any to change in my boots. I grabbed on my backpack and began to put them on. As I did so, my right foot met some resistance. There was something inside. I pulled it out. A shark toy? What the hell? I pondered what this could be. Oh, I see. I was being messed with. A shark in my boot. A predator was afoot. Talk about on the nose. I laughed it off and went on my way. I placed the toy in the passenger seat of my truck. I called up my old flame Molly to join my hike. It had been forever since we'd seen each other, and she'd always enjoyed hiking. We spent the day laughing away at all the good times we'd had. It was really good seeing her again. I dropped her off at home and kissed her goodbye. It had been a great day. That night, I had trouble sleeping. There were these loud scraping sounds outside. For the life of me, I couldn't figure out where they were coming from. The old cabin didn't have any neighbors in close proximity. When I woke the next morning, I got my answer. Something had been carved into the pavement. It was the word next. Well, that's just perfect. If Sam Fuller was real, he worked quickly. If he pops up in my mirror, I know exactly what I'm going to do. Hand him a bill for this shit. The rest of the day went by without incident. I bought some ammo and put it next to the gun rack in the shed, just in case. Before I knew it, the sun had come and gone. I was brushing my teeth when I noticed something out of the corner of my eye. My eyes darted in that direction, and I saw a glimpse of something horrifying. In an instant, it was out of my sight, but the details had been seared into my brain. The pale gray skin dripping with water. The absence of facial features except the mouth. That disgusting mouth. Extending the entire width of the face, each part of it moving autonomously. As if it were a combination of different mouths, each trying to tell some story, bending unnaturally to do so. I gently left the bathroom and surveyed my surroundings. There wasn't anyone there. I looked to my left and noticed that some of the carpet had darkened. It was wet. So he was real. The rest of the story must be true as well. He'd be coming for my life in 24 hours. For the first time, fear had begun to creep in. He really was hitting me now. I was going to be hunted by an entity of unknown strength and ability. It's quite possible this was my last night on this planet. I had to ask myself an important question. If this was it for me, how did I want to spend my last day? I tossed and turned all night, contemplating the answers to this question. I awoke the next morning around 6 a.m. I had roughly 16 hours to live. Despite all the tossing and turning, I realized that at my core, I'm truly a simple man. I didn't have many desires. After I woke, I went fishing on the lake again in an attempt to ease my nerves. By the time I got off the lake, I had 10 hours to go. I drove around town, remembering the days of my youth and all the good times I'd had in Casper. 8 to go. I went to a firing range to see how rusty I was. 6 hours to go. I hit up Molly again. This was my last day. I wanted to spend my last few 3 hours with her. I took her to dinner, and then we rekindled some of the old magic for a bit. Before I knew it, it was time to get back. There was 1 hour left. The sun had set. Only one last thing to do. I made it back to the property with about 20 minutes left. I grabbed the shark toy and one other thing from the seat and headed into the cabin. From there, I made my way over to the kitchen. I browsed the liquor cabinet and found the recently filled vodka bottle. In one hand was the bottle, the other hand held the toy that forewarned me of the impending doom. I wanted things to be on my term, and I headed over to the shed. Inside, I looked to my gun rack. It was empty. The ammo was missing too. Yep, only one last thing to do. I took a seat at the bench at the far end of the room, and I drank away. I don't know exactly how long it took from that point on before I heard the rustling outside. Should have been minutes, but it felt like hours. My mind was racing and it all blurred together. I knew exactly what was coming. That's when the door creaked open. Sam Fuller, I presume, I said, turning around in my seat. There he was in all his disgusting glory. Every inch of his gray figure dripping. Now that I had a good view of him, I noticed his limbs appeared elongated and that his joints allowed a greater range of motion than any human had. His mouth widened, forming what I could only assume was a smile as he took a few steps closer to me. My gaze moved from his head to his feet. Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Grayson. Grayson White. The mouth didn't flinch, but there was a little movement where the eyes should have been. Almost like little circles were hiding underneath the layer of gray this thing called a face. You took my guns. Now I'm just a helpless drunk, I stammered. He continued. If that's what you thought, you'd be wrong. I waved the bottle in my left hand. This is actually water. I've been waiting for you, piece of shit. I instantly threw the toy I was holding in my right hand to the left of the creature, drilling the wall, hitting a button painted white. The floor beneath Sam folded downwards and he fell. I slowly made my way over to the rectangular hole in the floor and peered down. There was Sam, his body impaled and masked by sharpened silver spikes. He wailed a grotesque howl as pus exited his many piercing wounds. I don't know your state of consciousness or awareness, so I don't know if you understand me or not, but like you, I tragically lost a sibling. I pulled the other item I had taken from the car out of my pocket, a remote. It had 3 buttons lined up vertically in the middle. I hit the top button. More spikes shot out horizontally, piercing him further and dismembering his form. By the wails, I could tell that despite being ripped and torn apart, he was still alive. Good. Also, like you, I would have done anything to get revenge. I hit the middle button on the remote and sprinklers rained down from above over the hole. The stench of gasoline filled the air. It was so strong I could taste it. My foe peered up at me, and even without eyes, I could tell he was staring bullets through me. The funny thing about revenge is that it's short-sighted. If you justify revenge against others, you'll give others reasons to justify revenge against you. It's a never-ending cycle. I didn't start it, you didn't start it, neither did the boys who killed your brother, but we all perpetuated it. I sighed. My arm extended and I slowly wagged the remote back and forth. With my other hand, I methodically moved my pointer finger closer and closer to the button at the bottom, pausing for a brief moment. The truth is, Sam Fuller, we're the same. I, like you, am part of this cycle. I've been a part of it for a long time. I know eventually the cycle will come back to me. But today, it's come for you. For Verona White, may you rot in hell, I said, pressing the third button. The hole was immediately set ablaze. The heat was tremendous, and parts of my skin singed. I didn't budge. It was worth it to keep my eyes on this pitiful creature burned straight to hell. I waited until the flames waned, pissing on the ruins to douse the final embers. I looked down at my handiwork and saw the burnt remains of my prey. I'd avenged my sister. I admit I'd expected there'd be more remains. It was almost like all that was left was a burnt outer husk. The end.
Damn.
You're like, oh my god, he's just gonna get drunk and just hide in there. And you're like, never mind, he came here to set up a trap.
I did not expect that.
Reading it back was way more satisfying than the first time, because like I know everything, and he's like talking about like painting and like cleaning up and filling up the vodka container with something more useful, and I'm like, what the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah, I'm like, the fuck, that's dope.
The second reading was very satisfying. But yeah, that's gonna be it for us this week. Did you have anything else you wanted to add, Brayden?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, yeah, thank you all for listening. If you want to send us any episode ideas, any creepypasta you'd like us to read, you can email us at thespookyshit.pod@gmail.com. And you could follow us on Twitter and Instagram at spookyshit_pod. Our website is also spookyshit-pod.com. Thank you all for listening, of course. And yeah, we'll catch you on the flippity flip. Okay, yeah. Goodbye.
Bye.